one brought up politics, now everybody's mad. But you can't be mad when the whole world's singing gobble, gobble one, gobble, gobble two, come on. Gobble, gobble me, gobble, gobble you. Everybody now, gobble, gobble please, can I have some more?
Good morning, my friends, and welcome to a special Thanksgiving Eve episode. From high above all other primitive Lilliputian forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming. Happy Thanksgiving, my friends. You know, one thing I haven't heard from the mainstream media is if eating turkey is racist. You know, I wonder if you prefer dark meat over light meat, if that makes you racist or not. Perhaps I shouldn't have let the cat out of the bag. I mean, we know, of course, that Thanksgiving is a, you know, genocidal holiday, and that it glorifies the subjugation of native indigenous peoples. Not really. That's a bunch of historical revisionist bullcrap. Uh-oh. I said the word crap. Those redcoats are going to ask me to apologize again. I tell you what, guys, I'm going to wait until the end of this episode and probably still not apologize, because there's going to be a lot of stuff in this one that's going to make your little redcoat liberal head explode. Come to think of it, that might be a good thing. Oh, see, there I go again, saying inflammatory stuff. If you haven't guessed, this program doesn't really give a crap about political correctness at all, really. Because it's this dumb, woke obsession we have with political correctness that has screwed up history so badly that most of us don't have any idea why we're celebrating one holiday, and not to mention any of the others. Fortunately, today, Thanksgiving Eve, we're going to correct a little bit of history, well, for this holiday anyway, and we're going to talk about the real story of Thanksgiving. But before I do that, some completely egregious self-aggrandizement. You can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps. iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, Pandora, really any of them will work. But the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There you can find all of the shows as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If your name is Crickets Cheney or Sleepy Joe Biden and you don't have a clue what's going on, especially on Thanksgiving, well, you can go to cowboystatepolitics.com, pull up an article, and find out why it is that you're actually eating that turkey instead of sticking it up your nose. Stop that, Joe. Speaking of Sleepy Joe, did anyone see him attempting to pardon a turkey? Attempting being the operative word. I'm telling you guys, we are in way more trouble than any of us realize. And that's saying a lot, because I'm pretty sure all of us think, with Joe Biden in the White House, that all of us are completely screwed. But anyway, here's a little piece of him doing the turkey pardoning.
So, folks, turkey is infrastructure. Peanut butter and jelly are going to help build back the butterball as we move along. And so I'm going to walk over, I'm going to pardon this year's turkeys, a National Thanksgiving turkey. And the first one, the one's going to be pardoned is peanut butter.
Ah! I just can't take it. I was going to play the whole thing for you, and I just can't stand it. Well, I guess at least Joe Biden knows this whole infrastructure bill thing is a big joke on us. Okay, all right, I know that I said I would lay off politics, it being Thanksgiving Eve and all, and I will. But just one more thing, because we're going to get to this on Saturday during Weekend Update. Yesterday, in the Red Star, there were three opinion pieces on how we need to restrict the Second Amendment in America. That's in Wyoming's only statewide paper at the moment. Three opinion pieces calling for that. Now, if that doesn't tell you where the liberals and the redcoats in this state want to take you, nothing else will. But that's what we're going to cover on Weekend Update. Okay, I need to kind of set up this whole Thanksgiving thing for you. First, did you know that it is the 400th anniversary of our Thanksgiving celebration? 400 years that this has been going on. It's pretty amazing. And now, more than ever, we are being led to believe that our country is split right down the middle. I mean, come on, we're celebrating a 400-year anniversary, and every newspaper and news outlet, well, almost every single one of them, is trying to convince you that this country is divided more so now than it has ever been. Either you agree with the left and the redcoats, or you're a radical right-wing white supremacist. It's so crazy that if you happen to be black and are conservative, well, then you're spreading white supremacy or white privilege. Yeah, that's what I said. Even black conservatives. Let me give you a great example. Here's David Webb in an interview he did with this lady named Areva Martin, who is a CNN legal analyst. You're not going to believe this one. Here it is.
I've chosen to cross different parts of the media world, done the work so that I'm qualified to be in each one. I never considered my color the issue. I considered my qualifications the issue.
Well, David, you know, that's a whole nother long conversation about white privilege and things that you have the privilege of doing that people of color don't have the privilege of.
How do I have the privilege of white privilege?
David, by virtue of being a white male, you have white privilege. This whole long conversation, I don't have time to get
Areva, I hate to break it to you, but you should have been better prepped. I'm black.
Obviously, Areva Martin didn't know that David Webb is black. Now, she should have done her research, and she should have known it because David Webb is a pretty prominent media figure, and he's been on Fox News a lot. Okay, but the point I'm trying to make is the thought didn't even occur to her that maybe he's black. She just assumed that because he's successful, well, then he must be white. And then there was the article by Erica Smith in the LA Times. Now, I'm just going to read you the title because once you hear that, we're not even going to have to go into the article. But the title is, quote, Larry Elder is the black face of white supremacy. Okay, Larry Elder is a very prominent black media figure also. He ran for governor in California. And yet here she is accusing him, just because he happens to be conservative, of furthering white supremacy. This is crazy town. Or is it? Actually, you're being given a choice. You can either drink the Kool-Aid from the left and agree with them that all people of color, all different races, are subjugated because of white privilege and white supremacy, or not, and then you're just a white supremacist no matter what color you are. So you're being given a choice. Agree with them or not. The truth is that America really is the land of opportunity. That is the American dream. If you work hard enough, you can achieve anything, though I think we may have taken this whole anyone can be president thing a little bit too far. But we're being told through critical race theory and the New York Times 1619 Project that this country is systematically racist, that you don't have things because of the color of your skin, and other people do because of the color of theirs. So these two views couldn't be more diametrically opposed. This is the land of opportunity, and I'm going to prove it to you. And because today is Thanksgiving Eve, and I promise to lay off the politics for at least one day, trust me, Mom Iverson is pretty happy about that, we're going to talk about this in terms of history. But you see, history is useless if we don't allow it to inform the present. Right now, you're being presented with a choice. Be reliant on the government, agree with the left, or work hard and do it yourself. And if you work hard and do it yourself, well, then you're a racist because you're not relying on the government. You're not being a compliant little sheep. Thanksgiving is really more about being self-reliant than it is about being anything else. Now, what you've been told from school in your history class is that the pilgrims came here and they bumbled around and they just about died off. And if it weren't for the Indians teaching them how to plant corn and fish and hunt, and well, then they all would have perished. Now, part of that is true. Squanto, among others, did teach the colonists how to fish and hunt and plant corn, among other things. But that's not the whole story, and it's not even close. The Thanksgiving celebration did happen, because their harvest was abundant, and they did invite the Indians that had helped them. So that part is true. But you're missing everything that led up to it. Now, interestingly enough, you're also being presented with a choice in history. You see, at the same time that the Pilgrims were landing in Plymouth, there was a colony in Virginia that would become the center of the slave trade in the New World. The historical choice you're being given is to believe that America is the story of the Pilgrims, or to believe that America is the story of that Virginia colony. That's what those 1619 Project idiots want you to believe. But I think if you look at American history in total, you can see that now America is the most generous, the most charitable, the most giving, the most powerful nation this world has ever known. That is the legacy of America, and that if you work hard and apply yourself, that you can be anything that you want. You can be successful. It's not the history of that Virginia colony in which people were subjugated and sold on the auction block. We settled that debate a long time ago. So let me give you the choice that you never learned about in school, and you can make up your own mind. So when Rush Limbaugh started his program, every Thanksgiving he would read The Real Story of Thanksgiving. And if you read William Bradford's journal from the Plymouth Colony, you can see that it's exactly correct. Now, I've put the links to both Rush Limbaugh's story, and I'm basically just going to read it. I don't see any point in recreating the wheel. And I've also put a link on there to where you can see William Bradford's own journal, and you can read it for yourself and know that it's true. And at the end, I promise you, I already know which story of America that you're going to believe. Actually, it's amazing when you stop and think about it. Now, I don't know what you were taught about Thanksgiving, but what I was taught a version that goes something like this. The Pilgrims showed up, they were incompetent, they were well-intentioned, good-hearted people, but incompetent, and they didn't know how to do anything. They were stumbling and bumbling around in a foreign place, and they had no idea where they even were. And as they're on the verge of starvation, the Indians stumbled upon them, across them, and showed them how to basically live, gave them everything, showed them how to grow crops and kill turkey and build teepees and stuff, and so the Pilgrims survived, and we were giving thanks. That Thanksgiving is to acknowledge the Indians' role in saving the first Pilgrims. Now, it's a quaint story, and it has attached itself to a number of people, but it has nothing to do with the truth. I can't say that it's nothing to do, but it's very far removed from what the first Thanksgiving was really about. It was George Washington that first proclaimed it Thanksgiving. Well, now who was thanking who for what? That is the root of the error. The root of it is that the Pilgrims must have been giving thanks to the Indians for saving them. That's not what the Pilgrims were thankful for, as you will soon hear. The story of the Pilgrims begins in the early 17th century. That's the 1600s for those of you who live on Mount Normal in Wyoming. The Church of England, under King James I, was persecuting anyone and everyone who did not recognize its absolute civil and spiritual authority. The first Pilgrims were Christian rebels, folks, those who challenged King James' ecclesiastical authority, and those who believed strongly in freedom of worship were hunted down, imprisoned, and sometimes executed for their beliefs in England in the 1600s. We'll get back to the story of the first Thanksgiving here in just a second, but first, I want to tell you some things that I'm thankful for. In my family, on Thanksgiving Day, we make it a point to tell each other the things that we're truly thankful for. And I can tell you, without a doubt in my mind, that when I began Cowboy State Politics, I had no idea how much you, the listeners of this program, would come to mean to me. I am truly thankful for you. I'm thankful for the trust that you put in me, and I'm thankful that you listen to the show as much as you do. I'm also very thankful to my sponsors, Morton Buildings and the Wing It Food Truck. Without your support, I wouldn't be able to do a lot of the things that I do with the program. You guys have been steadfast, and I really am truly thankful and happy that we can do business together. This Thanksgiving, I encourage all of you to tell your friends and your family the things that you're truly thankful for. So push pause on the program, go tell them that, and come back and listen to the rest of the show. A group of separatists, Christians who did not want to buy into the Church of England or live under the rule of King James first fled to Holland and established a community of themselves there. After 11 years, about 40 of them, having heard about this new world that Christopher Columbus had discovered, decided to go. 40 of them agreed to make a perilous journey to the new world where they knew that they would certainly face hardships. But the reason they did it was so that they could live and worship God according to the dictates of their own consciences and beliefs. On August 1, 1620, the Mayflower set sail. It carried a total of 102 passengers, including 40 pilgrims, now known as the Pilgrims. They were led by William Bradford. On the journey, Bradford set up an agreement, a contract, that established how they would live once they got there. The contract set forth, quote, just and equal laws for all members of the new community, irrespective of their religious beliefs, end quote, or political beliefs. Where did the revolutionary ideas expressed in the Mayflower Compact come from? From the Bible, folks. The Pilgrims were a, quote, devoutly religious people, completely steeped in the lessons of the Old and New Testaments. They looked to the ancient Israelites for their example, and because of the biblical precedents set forth in Scripture, they never doubted that their experiment would work, end quote. They believed in God. They believed they were in the hands of God. And as you know, this was no pleasure cruise, folks. The journey to the New World on the tiny, by today's standards, sailing ship, it was long. It was arduous. There was sickness. There was seasickness. It was wet. It was the opposite of anything you think of today as a cruise today on the open ocean. When they landed in New England in November, they found, according to Bradford's detailed journal, a cold, barren, desolate wilderness. This is a quote here. There were no friends to greet them. There were no houses to shelter them. There were no inns where they could refresh themselves. End quote. There was nothing. The sacrifice they had made for freedom was just the beginning. During the first winter, half the pilgrims, including Bradford's own wife, died of either starvation, sickness, or exposure. They endured the first winter. Quote, when spring finally came, they had by that time met the indigenous people, the Indians, and indeed, the Indians taught the settlers how to plant corn, fish, cod, and skin beavers, end quote, and other animals. But there wasn't any prosperity. They did not yet prosper. They were still dependent. They were still confused. They were still in a new place, essentially alone among like-minded people. Now, this is really important to understand here because this is where modern American history lessons often end. Thanksgiving is actually explained in some textbooks as a holiday for which the pilgrims gave thanks to the Indians for saving their lives rather than what it really was. That happened. Now, don't misunderstand. That all happened. But that's not, according to William Bradford's journal, what they ultimately gave thanks for. Now, here is the part that's been omitted. The original contract that they made on the Mayflower as they were traveling to the New World. They actually had to enter into that contract with their merchant sponsors in London because they had no money of their own. They needed somebody to sponsor them. So they found merchants in London to do that. The merchants in London were making an investment, and as such, the pilgrims agreed that everything they produced would go into a common store or a bank or a common account. And each member of the community was entitled to one common share in this bank. Out of this, the merchants would be repaid until they were paid off. All of the land that they cleared and the houses they built belonged to the community as well. Everything belonged to everybody, and everybody had one share in it. They were going to distribute it equally. That was considered to be the epitome of fairness, sharing the hardship burdens and everything like that. Nobody owned anything. It was a commune, folks. It was the forerunner to the communes that we saw in the 60s and the 70s and out in California and other parts of the country. And it was complete with organic vegetables, by the way. Somebody call Whole Foods. Now, Bradford, who had become the new governor of the colony, recognized that it just wasn't working. It was, quote, as costly and destructive. His own journals chronicle the reasons it didn't work. Quote, Bradford assigned a plot of land to fix this to each family to work and manage, end quote, as their own. He got rid of the whole commune structure and assigned a plot of land to each family to work and manage. And whatever they made, however much they made, was theirs. They could sell it, they could share it, they could keep it, they could do whatever the heck they wanted to with it. What really happened is they turned loose the power of the free market after enduring months and months of hardship. First on the Mayflower and then getting settled, then the failure of the common account from which everybody got the same share. There was no incentive for anybody to do anything. And as is human nature, some of the pilgrims were a bunch of lazy twerps and others busted their hind ends. But it didn't matter because even the people that weren't very industrious got the same as everybody else. Bradford wrote about how this just wasn't working. What Bradford and his community found, and I'm basically going to use his own words, quote, was the most creative and industrious people had no incentive to work any harder than anybody else. While most of the rest of the world has been experimenting with socialism for well over 100 years, trying to refine it, perfect it, and reinvent it, the pilgrims decided early on. William Bradford decided to scrap it permanently. Those are his exact words. Because it brought out the worst in human nature. It emphasized laziness and it created resentment. Now, because in every group of people, you've got your self-starters and you've got your hard workers and your industrious people and you've got your lazy twerps and so forth, there was no difference at the end of the day. The resentment sprang up on both sides. So Bradford wrote about this, quote, "For this community, so far as it was found to breed much confusion and discontent and retard much employment that would have been to the benefit and comfort. For young men that were most able and fit for labor and service did repine that they should spend their time and strength to work for other men's wives and children without recompense," that's without any payment. "That was thought injustice. Why should you work for other people when you can't work for yourself? What's the point? The pilgrims found that people could not be expected to do their best work without incentive." So what did they try next? Well, they unharnessed the power of the good old free enterprise system by invoking the undergirding capitalistic principle of private property. Every family was assigned its own plot of land to work and permitted to market its own crops and products. And what was the result? "They had a huge success," wrote Bradford, quote, "for it made all hands," that's everybody, "industrious, so as much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been." So is it possible that supply-side economics could have existed before the 1980s? In no time, the pilgrims found they had more food than they could eat themselves. Now, this is where it gets really good, folks. If you're laboring under the misconception that I was, as I was taught in school, so they set up trading posts and exchanged goods with the Indians. The profits allowed them to pay off their debts to the merchants in London. And the success and prosperity of the Plymouth settlement attracted more Europeans and began what came to be known as the Great Puritan Migration. The word of the success of the free enterprise Plymouth colony spread like wildfire, and that began the Great Migration. Everybody wanted to be part of it. There was no mass slaughtering of the Indians. There was no wiping out of the indigenous people. And eventually, in William Bradford's own journal, unleashing the industriousness of all hands ended up producing more than they could ever need themselves. So the trading post began selling and exchanging things with the Indians. And the Indians, by the way, were very helpful. Puritan kids had relationships with the children of the Native Americans that they had found. This killing the indigenous people stuff they're talking so much about, that happened much, much, much later. It has absolutely nothing to do with the first Thanksgiving. The first Thanksgiving was William Bradford and the Plymouth colony thanking God for their blessings. That's the first Thanksgiving, folks. Nothing wrong with being grateful to the Indians, don't misunderstand me at all. But the true meaning of Thanksgiving, and this is what George Washington recognized in his first Thanksgiving proclamation. End quote. So really, the first Thanksgiving is the perfect example, perhaps the first example, of how socialism doesn't work. And the capitalistic free enterprise system always does. And perhaps on this 400th anniversary of the Thanksgiving celebration, we should look to the original story of Thanksgiving and remember that socialism never works, and it has never worked in the history of the world. And so, as a capstone on this episode, here is George Washington's first Thanksgiving Day proclamation. Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor, and whereas both houses of Congress have by their joint committee requested me to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness. Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November, next to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being, who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be, that we may then all unite in rendering upon him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation. For the signal and manifold mercies and the favorable interpositions of His providence, which we experienced in the course and conclusion of the late war, for the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty, which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general for all the great and various favors which He hath been pleased to confer upon us. And also, that we may then unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and Ruler of nations, and beseech Him to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us all, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually, to render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed, to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as have shown kindness upon us, and to bless them with good government, peace, and concord, to promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue, and to increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as He alone knows to be best. Given under my hand at the city of New York, the third day of October in the year of our Lord, 1789. So now you know the truth of the first Thanksgiving, and your vision of America isn't a choice any longer. You already know how it happened. Tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day, be thankful for what you have. Be thankful for your friends and family. Be thankful for this amazing country that we live in. And be thankful that God chose us to live in the great state of Wyoming. Happy Thanksgiving. From the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is Cowboy State Politics.